Coming up on episode number 1192, it's a very special episode of Coverville with a very special guest. You'll find out who that is, and also, well, you know, as usual, here's some amazing cover songs to go along with it. It is the special interview show, and it's coming up right now on Coverville.
Just getting rougher, cover me. Come on, baby, cover me. Well, I'm looking for a woman who will come on in and cover me.
Greetings from Coverville for Wednesday afternoon. It is Wednesday, November 1st, 2018. My name is Brian Ibbett, and welcome to another edition of Coverville, doing something very different today than I've done in the last, I don't know, few hundred shows. I've actually got a special guest on the show. It's been a while since I've had a special guest, but, you know, and of course all the challenges that go along with having a special guest. We've got him worked out. He's here. He's actually on the show. Ray Padgett from the Cover Me blog. Welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, and congratulations on 10 years of the Cover Me blog going strong. It's a great site, number one, and it's a great resource for people who are both hardcore fans of cover songs and casual fans of cover songs. There's something to discover for everybody there.
Well, thank you. And you could say exactly the same for Coverville.
Well, thanks. But, you know, I imagine there's going to be a lot of that back and forth here, seeing as we do a lot of the same thing. You know, the interviews I've done have been mostly with musicians and things like that. And so there's two different worlds. You and I, we come from the same world, two different sides of the same world. So there's going to be a lot of parallel between the questions that I ask you and the questions that I get asked when I'm doing interviews. So this ought to be fun. I get to turn the tables on you a little bit.
Let's do it.
All right. So before we get into this, the big so-called the big sort of announcement that that you've been able to do recently, or that you've had recently, is the creation of the book Cover Me, the stories behind the greatest cover songs of all time. This is kind of a partially like a 10-year celebration of your site, but also just a damn good book.
Well, thank you. I wish I could claim credit for timing it to the 10 years, but to be honest, it's a total coincidence that they happen to fall in the same month.
Oh, wow. Well, that would have been great planning then, if that's the case.
How long was that organized?
Yeah, right. how long have you been working on the book?
About 4 years, maybe. It came about because it came about, needless to say, from the blog. But more specifically, I had, through day jobs and stuff, I'd sort of offloaded a lot of the actual writing to various other writers and editors that work for the blog. And I was sort of getting discouraged because I wasn't writing as much about covers as I wanted to. Whereas, you know, the reason I started the blog, which is the same reason you started the show, is because we loved covers. We wanted talking in your case and writing in my case about them. So I wrote this very long sort of article to get my feet wet again about Jimi Hendrix All Along the Watchtower, like at 4,000 words or something, thinking, well, this is really wonky and no one's going to be interested in it, but, you know, it allows me to go a little long form. Then it turned out to be the most popular article we've ever had on the site, and that's the long way of saying that became basically the impetus of the book. The book is that plus 19 essentially similar chapters tracing the history of the cover song.
So All Along the Watchtower, the primary one that you'd want to write about of all 20 that we feature in the book, it's the first one that comes to mind, and it's a great one to come to mind because it's one that a lot of people don't realize is a cover. When they hear the Jimi Hendrix version, they maybe don't know that it's got its roots with Bob Dylan and that there's a whole other, not just a whole other version, but a whole other genre that the original one was done in.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that, you know, Jimi Hendrix so totally took over that song that basically every live version since that Bob Dylan himself has played has been a cover of Jimi Hendrix covering his song. Bob never went back to this sort of acoustic, you know, Americana original. It's now just a Jimi Hendrix song.
Weird. It's like the snake eating itself, basically, now that Bob Dylan's covering the cover. You see that a lot, too, with another song that we're going to talk about later, which is the Beatles, With a Little Help from My Friends. Once Joe Cocker got his hooks in it, that song took on a new life and almost branched, like created a separate branch in the music world where you either cover the Beatles version or you cover the Joe Cocker version.
You have to pick a side.
Really do, yeah. Great example. Well, let's get right into this. One of the ones that, in reading your book, one of the stories that blew my mind was the story behind Midnight Train to Georgia. I always knew it wasn't originally done by Gladys Knight and the Pips, and that there were all these earlier versions. I actually thought Sissy Houston's version was the first, but apparently Jim Weatherly did a version before that called Midnight Train to Houston. What I didn't know was where the idea for the song came about. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh yeah, it's a sort of amazing, you know, amazing story. So Jim Weatherly, who you just mentioned, he recorded the original, but he's also the guy who wrote it. And he was friends with Lee Majors, the actor, $6 Million Man was his sort of big claim to fame. And so he calls his buddy Lee Majors up one day just to shoot the breeze, and Lee's not in. But Lee's girlfriend at the time is in, a woman you may have heard of named Farrah Fawcett. And so they're chatting a little, and he says, "What are you doing?" And Farrah says, "Oh, I'm packing. I got a red eye tonight. I'm leaving on a midnight plane to Houston." And he hears that phrase, not midnight train to Georgia, but midnight plane to Houston. And he says, "There's a song there." So he leaves and, you know, writes it very quickly, the song, which as he originally recorded it, Midnight Plane to Houston.
Wow. And then it was Sissy Houston who first recorded it as Midnight Train to Georgia, but of course no backing vocals, no Pips behind Sissy Houston's version.
Yeah, she said she changed it from plane to train because her people didn't take planes, and she changed it to Georgia because that's where family was from. But my theory is always it sounds weird to sing Midnight Plane to Houston when your name is Houston.
Yeah, for sure. It may be a little self-referential.
Yeah, in singing in the third person, that seems a little strange.
Exactly. So the version we're going to hear right now is the Sissy Houston version from, I believe, 1970, from the album Presenting Sissy Houston. Here is Midnight Train to Georgia.
Just too much for him. So he's leaving the life we've come to know. He said he's going back to find what's left of his world. Thank you.
famous Night in the Pips with their version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine. Not the original version, but a very early version, like kind of in those days when they were fishing the song around to several different performers before they decided who they were going to release it as a single. I think theirs was actually released, right, Gladys Knight?
Yeah, and it was the third recorded, but the first released. Motown kept trying it on different artists. They first tried to get Smokey Robinson to record it, and they didn't like that, so they put it away. Then they tried to get Marvin Gaye to record it, and believe it or not, they at first didn't like that. They put it away. Berry Gordy said his test of a song was if you only had enough money to buy the song or a sandwich, which would you buy? Apparently those didn't beat the sandwich. So Gladys Knight was the third recording, but the first they deemed good enough to release. And then once Gladys Knight became a hit, subsequently the famous Marvin Gaye version, which they had put on the shelf, they brought out and released, and it was an even bigger hit.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. And that's one of those funny things that depending on your point of view, and I always wrestle with this myself when I'm labeling covers, when I'm saying who the original performer was, for me, it's who releases it first, not necessarily who records it first. Like Jeff Beck and Stevie Wonder, Superstition, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah.
Them racing Stevie Wonder's version out, even though Jeff Beck recorded it first.
Yeah, there's a lot of Bob Dylan songs like that too. And yeah, you're trying to figure out, especially in a case like this where multiple people are recording it and they're sitting around and, you know, things are being released sort of at erratic times. But yeah, I always say you're not covering the person who wrote it. If you're doing a cover, you're covering, you know, the recording.
Makes sense. Before that, the Top Notes and Twist and Shout, a song that, you know, I would have credited to the Isley Brothers before reading your
Yeah, well, your most book. People would have. The Top Notes, unfortunately, did not get any of that Twist and Shout mojo that made it a hit for multiple other bands.
Beatles, of course, being another one. And that was a Phil Spector produced recording. I didn't know that either.
Neither did I. But apparently before he came up with everything you would associate with Phil Spector, like the Wall of Sound, it was sort of obscure early days Phil Spector.
Wow. Todd Duncan and the original version of The Unchained Melody, which came from a movie called Unchained, originally just a theme, and Todd sings the vocals in the film, apparently, and you hear just that little snippet of it, and Righteous Brothers added a whole lot more to that. Big Mama Thornton and the original version of Hound Dog, a song that, of course, Elvis Presley, I guess, watered down.
Depending on how you look at it, but an argument could be made.
That's true, that's true. He just really stripped all the blues out of it.
Well, though, he made it about an actual dog.
That's true, right? Yes. No symbolism, no double entendre.
No, yeah, there's no double entendre in you chasing rabbits. That's just about a hound dog. The original writers famously hated his version because they said it doesn't make sense. We wrote the song about basically, you know, a cheating boyfriend, and now he's singing about catching rabbits. That's ridiculous. But then in later years, they would add, we hated the song, ... until the checks started coming in.
Right. Yeah. Then the opinions, it's amazing how those will change.
Your bank account goes up.
And then Sissy Houston with, again, not the first version, but an early version of Midnight Train to Georgia, which became a big hit for the recently played Gladys Knight and the Pips. It all circles back. It all comes back around.
It all ties in.
Have you done those, by the way? Had fun with like putting together cover chains where you see how long a cover chain you can make with one artist covering the previous one and see how far you can go with something like that?
Oh, yeah. It's always fun to do. And I've actually periodically tried to do it as a series on Cover Me. But what I always want to do is, and it's very hard to figure out without maybe, you know, data analysis or something, but I'd love to do a long chain and then have it circle all the way back, you know?
Yes.
But having that ending part is more difficult than it might sound.
It's the trickiest part, right? But you've got all these bands that reform and they decide to release a greatest hits album after, you know, not doing anything for 20 years, and they include one cover song on there, and it's like, all right, now that chain has a chain.
Yeah, I wish I'd kept records of the missing pieces to go back and look.
Right, exactly. Speaking of the blog, you've gotten some amazing performers and amazing performances as part of the Cover Commission series. Really, really like, when you get artists to do songs that they normally wouldn't necessarily think of covering or You get some input from the audience on that. Let's say you've got unlimited resources, unlimited funds. Do you have a dream performer in mind and maybe a dream cover that they do?
Ah, that's a great question. The dream performer, if I had unlimited money and unlimited resource and unlimited ability to coax someone to come out of semi-permanent retirement, would be Tom Waits. I don't think I've ever heard him cover a song that is not amazing. And the dream cover, I'm going to pick one we just played, just because I was listening to the Righteous Brothers sing Unchained Melody. Can you imagine Tom Waits singing Unchained Melody?
Growling his way through.
I realize many, probably the vast majority of humans on Earth would actually hate that and think that sounds like a terrible idea. But as someone who loves Tom Waits' voice, I think it would be amazing to hear him sing that song.
I think that would be fantastic. Great. Well, let's get on that. We're going to work on it. We're going to, you know, petition.
Our people will talk to Tom's people and
letter writing campaign. Yeah. Who knows? All right, let's get to another one that is another perfect example of a song that people don't realize is a cover. Aretha Franklin's Respect. Of course, Otis Redding doing the original. This is another great story from the book, I hope I'm selling this to the people by telling them about this stuff because it's really, really fascinating. Do you have anything you want to talk about on Respect?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. When I first heard Aretha was her cover, you know, years ago, maybe around when I was starting the blog, as you probably did, you go back and you say, oh, let's hear the original recording. Let's go listen to Otis Redding's version. So I did on YouTube, or it may have been before YouTube, but I dug it up somewhere. And I remember listening to it being like, I'm not sure I have the right song. This doesn't sound like Aretha's at all, not just in sound, but, you know, you're listening for R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, and all the sort of the backing vocals and all the iconic parts of the Aretha song. And the amazing thing is she basically added all of those from scratch. Otis is a sort of a, you know, a romantic, you know, soul blues sort of song. And Aretha adds all these, her and her sisters add all these parts that make it this, a feminist anthem, a civil rights anthem. I mean, talk about sort of reinventing a song. And that's the reason why, you know, Otis is, no knock on Otis, who's, you know, a genius in his own right, but his is sort of a footnote to Aretha's.
It totally is. There's just other great examples of that. Soft Cell adding the doot doot.
Tainted Love.
And now everybody, when you cover that song, like from Marilyn Manson to anybody else, they have to add that doot doot, but very very subdued and just again part of the regular guitar line in the Gloria Jones version.
I know it's been sort of forgotten that the original, or not forgotten, right, but just owned by them so completely.
Yeah. All right, well, back to Respect. Let's hear a version that was actually released between those two versions, between the Otis Redding version and the Aretha Franklin version. So this has more in common with the Otis original. This is a band called The Rationals from Cameo Parkway from 1966. Here is Respect.
Respect when I come home. Hey, 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 hey. All right, baby. stand up and walk out on me. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I'll try not to sing out of key. I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do I do when my love is away? Does it worry you to be alone? How do I feel by the end of the day? Are you sad because you're on your own? Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends.
Do you need anybody?
I need somebody to love.
Could it be anybody?
I want somebody.
Confusion can get no relief.
Businessmen, they drink my wine. Plowmen dig my earth. Not long the month on the line. Know what they are, it is for. No reason to get excited. The thing they kindly spoke. There are many here among us who think life is but a joke. Yes, you and I, we've been through that, and it is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now. How's our getting late?
Yeah! 5 feet four, from my head to the ground. You know she come round, yeah, just about midnight. She make me feel so good. She make me feel alright. Gotta call her.
Tribute to Van Morrison. They came out in 2003 called Vanthology. That is Sir Mac Rice, otherwise known as Bonnie Mac Rice, with a cover of Gloria. Now, there's a song that's seen its share of covers, for sure.
Yeah, millions of them. The one I write about in the book is Patti Smith's version, and the sort of funny thing about that is, unlike, say, Watchtower or a lot of these other songs we're talking about, her cover is very famous and well-known, but basically everyone still covers Van Morrison's Gloria. Very few, almost nobody covers Patti Smith's version with her own lyrics.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And she's another one of those artists that with her cover, it depends on, again, perspective, Because the Night, a song that Bruce Springsteen wrote, couldn't finish, and it was actually in the recording studio, and then gave to her to finish, or I guess the producer.
Jimmy Iovine was working with both of them at the time.
Right. By the way, that performer, Cermak Rice, he's no stranger to having his music covered. Mustang Sally was written by him, and he co-wrote Respect Yourself. So he's speaking of songs that have been through so many covers, you almost don't know where the original is.
Yeah, some songs just become standards that it's hard to trace back their origins.
Millions of bar bands and stuff like that.
And you'd think the writer would complain, but if they're credited as the writer and they're getting a little money from every one of those covers, typically they're just fine with that.
I'm sure they're totally okay with it, yeah. The Alan Bown, also known as the Alan Bown Set, with All Along the Watchtower. This is from an album called Take What You Need that was recently remastered, re-released. Now, what's cool about this is that this version was recorded before Jimi Hendrix's version, and according to the liner notes of the BBC Shapes and Sounds collection, this was an inspiration to Jimi Hendrix. Like, this version... the rock aspects of it were an influence to Jimmy's version, which really surprised me.
Yeah, there's some dispute over that. I spoke with Jimmy's girlfriend at the time, and she took some issue with this. The idea, basically what she said was that Jimi Hendrix, as was well known, was sort of a Bob Dylan obsessive, and you know, he bought John Wesley Harding when it came out. And the interesting thing that she said was that he actually had no intention of covering All Along the Watchtower. He was going to cover I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine. But he tried it and he played around with it, and it was in a weird, you know, time signature. And so she said, "Why don't you cover All Along the Watchtower?" And he said, "I don't know, I'll try it." But yeah, then it became this sort of amazing track. Similar, whether he knew the one you just played or not, it's sort of amazing that they came out sort of both parallel rock versions, and both of them within, you know, under a year since Bob Dylan did it. It's amazing the turnaround time on those.
Yeah, they really, really rushed those out. With a Little Help from My Friends by Benjamin Francis Leftwich, that one from an album called Yellow Submarine Resurfaces, which is funny because that song didn't originate on Yellow Submarine, but it was one of those, I believe it was a ride-along CD that comes with or came with Q Magazine or Mojo Magazine or Uncut, great sources. At least back in the day, back 5-10 years ago, those CDs were great resources.
Mojo, once or twice a year, still they'll put something out, and it's always amazing.
Okay, I need to keep an eye on those. And then the Rationals at the top of that set with a cover of Respect. Again, came out right after Otis Redding's version. As a matter of fact, this was the song that got them their contract with Cameo Records of Cameo Parkway. And just maybe a year before the Aretha Franklin version. And Scott Morgan, who is the vocalist of the Rationals, got offered to be the lead vocalist for Blood, Sweat, and Tears and turned it down. Decided to stay in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And keep the garage band thing going.
Wonder how much has thought of that in the years since.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much of an influence Blood, Sweat, and Tears were back then, but boy, you look at the names, the Rationals and Blood, Sweat,
yeah, right.
And we're very familiar with one, not so much the other. Let me pull up my notes here. I know I had another question I wanted to ask you. Oh, well, it's an easy one. And it's, again, one that I get asked all the time, and I want to hear your take on it. What is your definition of a great cover? What makes a cover a success, in your opinion?
That is a great question, and you, of all people, would know. Yes, an often asked one. And my answer is, I tend to flip it, and I say, let me first answer, what's a bad cover? What's the worst cover? Because you always see these lists of like the worst covers of all time, and it's like Madonna doing American Pie, or, you know, Britney Spears covering a classic rock song, those sorts of things. But my argument is always that the worst cover of all time is actually a tie between millions of covers, and it's every cover that doesn't change anything about the original. Which, to flip it back to your question, that's the main thing. You have to change something. You have to make it your own. It can be a song you love. It can be a song you don't care that much about, but you have to find your own way into it as a musician and change it, whether musically or lyrically or vocally or in some way that makes it not just you imitating someone else, but you doing your own thing with someone else's lyrics.
That is the best answer. 100%. No, that's exactly right. Do you have an earliest cover? And, you know, we've all got our favorites and stuff, but what's the first cover you ever remember hearing, like, and realizing, oh, I know that song, but I know it done by somebody else.
Yeah, so they, back in the maybe middle 2000s, shortly before I started the blog, and this actually was an impetus for the blog, Bob Dylan, people may remember, Bob Dylan had a short-lived radio show. And he would every week play songs on a theme, you know, 10 songs about shoes or 10 songs about weather or something. And one week he did 10 songs about summer. And the first song he plays is a cover of the Gershwin song Summertime, which is one of the most often covered songs of all time. You know, Summertime and Living is Easy, all that stuff. And every version I'd ever heard, and in fact most versions out there, they're sort of in the same mold. They're slow and languid and beautiful and like torch songy. But he plays this version that some of your listeners may know, but I did not at the time, by Billy Stewart, a soul singer from the 60s. And it's fast, and there's horns blaring, and there's scatting. And I'm listening to this, and the lyrics are the same, but it couldn't be more different musically. And I'm thinking to myself, I literally didn't know you could do this. I didn't know you could take a song that you sing one way and just totally revamp it so dramatically. Right. And that's sort of what started me on my whole journey.
That's a great, that's the version that's got the...
Yeah, that's how it leads in. So from the opening notes, you're like, what is this?
I love that version. Yeah, that's a great example. I go back to Blue Swede and BJ Thomas and Hooked on a
yes.
Feeling. I remember being on AM radio in my, you know, carrying a transistor radio everywhere I went, and then hearing that Ooga Chaka from the Blue Swede version and thinking, oh my gosh, this is... this is that same song, but it's completely different. And yeah, the earliest one I can think of. Anyway,
if you haven't yet, I'll give you a little plug to go check out. We just celebrated our 10-year, and I put together like a covers album of famous covers, and that's one of them. I had a guy in Sweden who's amazing called The Land Below. I basically commissioned him to cover that cover that you're talking about, and he strips away the Ooga Chakas and most everything else, and makes this like slow electronic-y ballad. And it's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's super cool. Is that one of the songs that that people can get if they pre-order? Well, I guess you can't pre-order the book now because it's out. But if they order the book from you,
no, that's that's another mix. This you can just get. You don't need to do anything. Although I'd encourage you to buy the book. But if you just go to the website covermesongs.com and if you search "Cover Me Turns 10" or it's advertised around, you'll find it. But yeah, as you say, there's if you pre-order the book or if you buy the book, if you send me an email, I send you another. Semi-secret playlist.
It's a great one too. A lot of great stuff. It was actually hard when I was putting this episode together. There were ones that I was thinking, oh, I want to include. Oh, nope, that's already in there. Or that's
sorry.
Oh no, that's great. It's given people a whole different version or different collection of stuff to listen to. So, lots of different ways that they can enjoy all the stories in this book, including going and buying the book, which you should do. All right, let's get to one last set of music here. This one is one that certainly people don't think of when they think of the Dolly Parton original of "I Will Always Love You." This one, it's not a great recording. I'm going to own that right now. And it's not an officially released recording, but whatever, I'll get away with it this time. It was recorded on WLYX in 1975 in Memphis. Alex Chilton, who, you know, from Big Star and from the Box Tops, apparently really liked the Dolly Parton song that had just been released. This was, you know, 1975, so right around the time that that she had released her version of it, and decided to cover "I Will Always Love You" for the radio. And you can tell it's a recorded from the radio version, but it still has some Alex Chilton magic, and part of that magic probably was some of the illicit drugs that he was on at the time. But here it is, "I Will Always Love You," recorded here by Alex Chilton.
We're gonna lapse back into the lovesick blues boy business. If I should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll go, but I know I'll think of you each step of the way. And I will always love you. I are sweet memories. That's all I'm taking with me. So goodbye, and please don't cry. We both know that I'm not what you need, and I I'm looking now at the green sweater that you gave me, and the boy with the green hair, and the green MG came out of the body shop today, and I took my last 35 milligrams of Valium before coming here, but above all this and the rest, oh, I will always love you, will always love you. I will always love you.
satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction, 'cause I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't. I can't get no satisfaction, 'cause I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't get no, I can't get no, when I'm watching my TV and that man comes on to tell me how white my shirt can be, but he can be. I can't get no satisfaction, 'cause I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't get no, I can't get no, no satisfaction, no satisfaction, no satisfaction, no satisfaction.
Always on my mind. Maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. And I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. Should have said and done, I just never took the time. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You're always on my mind.
From a 2013 album called Uncovered, which is probably the most common name for a cover album, that is Jody Sider's and her cover of Always On My Mind. All right, Ray, how many different versions of Always On My Mind can you trace back? I feel like that version seems to pull some from Elvis Presley, seems to pull some from Willie Nelson, seems to pull something from Brenda Lee's version.
Probably everyone but the Pet Shop Boys. I didn't hear a lot of Pet Shop Boys in that.
Boys in that one, and that's the one you talk about in the book. And again, another discovery thanks to this book. I had no idea that it actually was originally recorded for an Elvis tribute concert. And all the other songs you mentioned in there, like Boy George's
"Are You Lonesome Tonight?" Song.
Night, yeah, you never hear that.
Never
one.
Hear
any
of
mention
them.
Of that.
Yeah,
one.
Well, that's sort of what's so funny about this, and it ties back to your question earlier about what makes a good cover. I used to answer that by saying you have to love the song. Until I learned the story behind Pet Shop Boys being Always On My Mind, when I realized that was not true, because the Pet Shop Boys hated Always On My Mind and they hated Elvis, which is why, indirectly and ironically, this is why theirs is the famous one, whereas Meatloaf and everyone else in this stupid TV tribute is instantly forgotten, their covers, because Pet Shop Boys, you know, basically only did this TV tribute, not because they liked Elvis, but for business reasons, sort of cynical, good exposure sort of music business reasons. And so they picked Always On My Mind only because it was the first song on the first cassette or whatever they had, and they didn't want to listen anymore. But because they disliked Elvis so thoroughly, they said, all right, let's just throw out everything about the Elvis version. Let's just ignore every single thing about it except for the words and make it a Pet Shop Boys song. And so, ironically, their distaste for the Elvis version in particular is what made their cover so original and so different.
Really did. Yeah. And all their covers are great. Their Village People Go West cover is another.
Yeah, they did a great Springsteen one, I think, not on the last album, but the previous one.
Oh, really? I need to go back and look for that. I don't know if I know about that one. Very cool. Before that, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Okay, so maybe, you know, CeeLo and Ludi aren't as frenetic as Devo, but pretty darn
They're
close.
They're up there. Different sound, though, a little bit.
Yeah, a little Ukrainian, a little more Ukrainian sounding than Devo. That one, they've kind of sprung onto the scene on YouTube with a bunch of really great covers. It's My Life by Bon Jovi being another great one. Really, really bizarre, but great ukulele Ukrainian.
That's amazing. I guess that's the beauty of YouTube, is now groups like this doing covers can come to, you know, our attention.
They can get an audience, yeah. Let's see. Before that was Ava Cassidy doing her cover of Take Me to the River, Reverend Al Green, a song that obviously was transformed very much by the Talking Heads. Her version, her voice was so amazing. So I think she's one of those artists that had perfect pitch, but unfortunately had just like crippling stage fright and very tragic story with Ava Cassidy. But that was recorded live at Blues Alley in 1997. Great version of that song.
Yeah, the Talking Heads, it sort of ties in to the Pet Shop Boys a little bit, not in that they didn't like the song. They loved the song, but they didn't want to record the song. David Byrne, I interviewed him for the book. You know, I tried to do original interviews where possible. And David Byrne was telling me he resisted recording to their version of Take Me to the River because he was worried that that would become the hit and that would become what they were known for, which ironically was, in fact, the case. This was before, you know, their other many famous songs. And Take Me to the River became this huge hit. And as a result, he refused to let the Talking Heads ever record another cover.
Oh, wow. So once bitten, twice shy with regard to covers from David Byrne. Interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of funny that I talked to a bunch of, you know, three of the Talking Heads, and they were all saying that, like, he had to be, you know, sort of kicking and screaming them, and they had to team up with Brian Eno. They're like, David, this is what's going to make us translate, which I talked to the guys from Devo about Satisfaction, which is the version I write about too. And it was the same thing where these bands are sort of, they're both very young and new, and they're thought of as these sort of art rock weirdos. And but they have ambitions to be, you know, genuine rock stars. And so this is one way the cover can be useful for a band, is if you've got your own sort of strange sound that's pretty outside the mainstream. Both these bands found that when they covered a song that was very well known, Take Me to the River for Talking Heads and I Can't Get No Satisfaction for Devo, but in their own style, that was like a bridge. Then wider audiences said, oh, now I get it. Now I'm going to listen to other Devo songs, other Talking Heads songs.
It's kind of the way that you can figure out what a band is all about. If you have something you're already familiar with, it's kind of that bridge to, you know, when you hear them do a cover, you can strip away all the things you know about that song, about the song they're covering, and what should be left, if they're doing it right, what should be left is the essence of that band. And so, yeah, it's a great comparison there. And then top of that set, Alex Chilton and I Will Always Love You recorded live in 1975 for WLYX in Memphis. Very touching until he starts talking about the green sweater and green hair and the green MG that's just out of the body
and taking,
shop.
And take how he took Valium, I think he said Valium before he got in there. I got a kick out of that.
Right. Well, very good. Well, so that kind of is a good taster for the book. I mean, we just did, 13 songs, and a good tease of what, some of the stories that come from the book. It is an amazing book. I mean, so many of these great stories, and the fact that you are able to talk to the performers or the girlfriends of the performers or connections to the performers, it's something that adds so much to the how and the why of doing a cover. So it's I highly recommend it, obviously, and hope that everybody listening will run out and pick up a copy. Where's the best place, by the way, as a book publisher or a book producer? Where do you want people to get it from Amazon, or you want them to go to covermesongs.com?
Well, you should go to covermesongs.com anyway, but no, we don't sell it ourselves. So I would say get it wherever you get books. As a personal supporter of, you know, independent and local bookstores or whatever towns I visit, I always encourage people to check it out there and ask them if they don't have it. But if you want to get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anywhere else, I'm fully supportive.
So you support the indie bookstores as well as the indie artist. I love that.
you got to.
Very cool. Well, Ray, thank you so much, man. Thank you for being here. Great having you on the show. And once again, the website, tell people where they can
find you. It's covermesongs.com, or if you just Google Cover Me. It was our biggest milestone was when we first beat the Springsteen song, when you Google Cover Me, when we first hit the number one search result years ago. But yeah, it's been great being on. It's a rare privilege to talk to someone as obsessed about covers as I am. So it's been fun, and I appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you so much, man. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Coverville. If you want to get in touch with me, email me requests@coverville.com is the email address to use. You can also call the request line 1-877-7-COVER-9. That's 1-877-7-COVER-9. And of course, everything else you want right there at coverville.com. You'll find show notes, links to everything I played in the show where you can buy them and all that great stuff. Until next time, this is Brian Abbott saying that just about covers it for tonight. We'll see you next time right here on Coverville. Coverville is a proud member of the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, and bandwidth for Coverville was provided by Cashfly, C-A-C-H-E-F-L-Y, cashfly.com. Coverville is also part... See, I do this live. Coverville is also part of the Frog Pants Studios Ultra Feed. You can find out more about that by going to frogpants.com, where you can hear podcasts so good, it's like you're there.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.